members and audience, let's bring the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee to order. Representative Hancock, would you approve the minutes from yesterday's, or move the minutes for approval?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the minutes of February 22nd.
Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are moved. Representative Hancock, did I understand you want to move this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 2244 to pass and be referred to Government Ops.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Dietrich, welcome. Don't need to identify yourself for the record. You could just start going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're happy to have the opportunity to be here with you to talk about House File 2244. The concept of House File 2244 is not new to the Minnesota House, nor is it new to this committee. The person sitting to my right, Representative Dietrich, and others before I even got here in the Minnesota State Legislature have been championing on behalf of the Minnesota Constitution and on behalf of school children here in the state of Minnesota. Article 11, Subdivision 8 of the Minnesota State Constitution indicates that certain lands have been set aside as a result of statehood in the United States, I should say for Minnesota in the United States, for the purpose and benefit of school children. The requirement for the federal government was that one tract of land, a section of land measuring 1 mile by 1 mile, be set aside in each township in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota chose to double down on that. Sections 16 and 36 have been set aside in each of the townships in the state of Minnesota for the purpose of school children. And these lands are to be managed in such a way that they are to benefit the students who are school students or school children here in the state of Minnesota. Over the 150 plus years of statehood in the state of Minnesota, those particular lands have either been bought, sold, or traded, which is perfectly permissible within the confines of the Constitution. The question that has arisen is the issue as a trust, as that those lands being held in trust, what does it mean to be a fiduciary? A fiduciary has an obligation as a person who is responsible for the trust assets on behalf of the beneficiary. The beneficiary are going to be the children here who attend public schools in the state of Minnesota. Currently, the trustee on that is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources does a great job of managing wilderness land and taking on conservation efforts. However, as a fiduciary, they have to advocate as well, fully, totally, and exclusively on behalf of the beneficiary. In a fiduciary obligation and responsibility, the highest standard that one has when taking and entering into agreements, when entering into relationships, or entering into contracts on behalf of the beneficiary, because they are doing it for another and for that individual or group's benefit. And we're suggesting that as we move forward, the legislature take and restructure how those lands are managed and setting up an independent commission that would have oversight of these properties, appoint a separate executive director who can help with long-range planning and management of this, and work in concert with other departments and other agencies within the state of Minnesota, including the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We would like to have the opportunity to remove this conflict of interest, relieve the DNR of the burden of this conflict of interest, and put this into a separate commission, into a separate area. In front of you, you have the bill that we are putting forward today, and this is a bill that has and continues to receive bipartisan support as we move forward. Mr. Chair, with those brief comments, I'd like to call my first testifier to the table, please. Actually, Mr. Chair, if I could, before that, I'd like to offer Representative Dietrich the opportunity to share her thoughts, as she's a long historian on this topic as well.
Representative Dietrich, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I've never been called a historian before, but I guess if there's any issue I would like to be called one on, it would be this one. As many of you know, I've been before this committee a couple of different times with different variations of the school trust lands bill that would restructure the management of the school trust lands. And this bill that is before you right now is not my first preference, and I'll be very, very blunt with you about that. I think that much more of an independent agency is the way to go, but I am not going to then be an obstacle for going forward when I think that the most important piece of any restructuring is in the bill. And what I think is the most important part of any bill that we would need to pass is a school trust lands manager slash director outside, that is housed outside of the DNR. And I think that what we have right here has been a conglomerate of many people's input, and what we have tried to do is take everybody's consideration into and to create a management model that that people can support. The one thing that I want to talk to you about is, once again, the director. That is the crux of this bill, and what I think that that director, what I want to just speak to a little bit of some of the criticisms of what people have said and just diffuse a few of them. Some people have said this bill is expanding government. This bill that you have before you is not. It is basically taking a allowing the school children of this state to have one school trust lands manager, and but housing them outside of the DNR, which has been actually supported in different legislative auditor reports, that we need somebody out of the DNR who can scrutinize the fund, the funds and the management of the lands. Some people have said this new model is inefficient. This is, I would contend that the current model is inefficient. And so when I look at this model, and as we went forward, the one thing that we said is that we have to be able to manage the lands more efficiently. And so some people have talked about different colored trucks meeting each other on the road. This bill does not necessarily mean that. There are lots of different options and flexibility within this bill to manage the lands, but they must be managed efficiently and with a return on the investment. The one other thing about that this bill does is it provides focus and consistency. There would be one person focused on a daily basis, 7 days a week, 365 days a year on the school trust fund and its management, and that would provide consistency also for the kids, because right now, as you know, the commissioner is the trustee, and that commissioner can change every 4 years. And so this means that the school children take their revenues and they hire one person who can work on their be their trustee every day, and if they're doing a good job, for as long as their career would last. The last thing that this person, having our own director, would do is it provides the undivided loyalty that Representative O'Driscoll talked about so eloquently. And so those are the reasons that I support this compromise language that a lot of people have worked on together. And I think that this is a step forward, although it is not my first preference. My first preference, though, was obviously not passed out of this committee last year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich and Representative O'Driscoll. First, we'd like to hear from Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Welcome. Ms. Kelleher, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, which is an association that represents elected school board members from around the state. We have been an association since 1920. I myself am a former school board member. And you might be wondering this morning sort of why we're here. School board members from around the state are pursuing this bill that would unwind and separate school trust funds from other DNR funds. This is a request by board members on behalf of the 800,000 students we have in K through 12 from across Minnesota. And I want to share with you personally, I'm a grandmother. This is my grandson. And I just became a grandmother again last week. And I want to, out of all the things we do in education and all the things we do at the legislature, I believe this trust fund and how it managed will be around for my grandsons, his children, and their children. And I encourage you today to realize that these school trust funds are unique. They were created in Minnesota's Enabling Act and ratified by Congress on February 26, 1857. We're 4 days short of the 155th year that this was enacted. And as Representative O'Driscoll said, Minnesota promised to set aside the 16th and 36th section of township land, and as written, obligated the United States and the state of Minnesota to be trustees in this. Congress also granted swamp lands as well as additional lands known as internal improvement lands to the state, and Minnesota is one of the only states that dedicated all three categories of land to public schools. The public schools are the beneficiary of the remaining 2.5 million acres of surface and 3.5 million acres of mineral rights. These historical documents created a perpetual trust and made each and every one of you a trustee for the children from around the state. And you, legislators, through statutes, have created the commissioner of the DNR as a trustee. Within this role of trustee, the commissioner is without oversight from the governor, from the legislature, or from any commission. The commissioner historically has spent and used the school trust lands as a credit card for other agency activities and conflicting missions. For example, after awaiting a year into his service, the present commissioner responded to the school trust land concerns was to add another DNR employee who would communicate and work with the legislature on school trust issues. The Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Board was unanimous in their opposition to this position that was minus any authority to improve management. But even after this recommendation failed in front of the advisory committee, the commissioner continued to put the position together. This just demonstrates that he has the ability to act on his own without oversight either of the legislature, the governor, or any commission. This bill requires you to act as a trustee. That means that minerals, forestry, community concerns are not your priority. Your priority is to run this for the children of the state of Minnesota. As a reference for you to look at this, your management fees on this fund since 2004 have risen over 300%, and administration costs have risen 100%. There is no... Lastly, I want to remind you that our founding fathers believed that these lands would ensure every student in Minnesota would have a free public education. Your ancestors saw that this trust was to be perpetual for kids. Members, I'm asking you to reach past your political feelings and realize the kids are counting on you for their future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Ms. Kelleher, thank you. I was just going to say I can't see you. I like pictures of grandchildren, believe you me. Questions for Ms. Kelleher? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kelleher, you mentioned that the DNR is using this as a credit card. Then you cited one recent example. Can you give me any others over the last 20 years? Or you also mentioned from 2004 on, so... using it as a credit card is a pretty broad statement. I'd like some examples if possible.
Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman and members, another example would be last year I was in front of you on Representative Dietrich's bill testifying, and in my testimony I alluded to 70 FTEs that could work for the school trust lands across the state. The commissioner, who I think's got some charisma and standing, came up and said, no, you're wrong. But later in the summer, we found out that, in fact, the FTE number was 136 for the school trust lands, with 13.7 full-time mineral management employees, 19.4 full-time surface management employees, 84 FTEs for timber sales, administration, and forest improvement, 0.5 FTEs on forest roads and bridges, 18.4 FTEs in fire protection. You do your math quickly this morning, that's 136 FTEs. Members, when it takes that much time to get what I would consider basic beneficiary information out, shows that we've got a problem here. And I'm asking you to take your role as a trustee for the children and enforce what the Constitution and statutes require.
Representative Hansen, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on the FTEs cited, is that that every hour of every day of every one of those employees is working off of school trust dollars, or is the agency cost coding like most agencies do, where they're clocking time down to half-hour increments, and if they spend time on the school trust issue, they clock the time to that?
Ms. Kelleher, the next testifier is the commissioner, so if some of that, you know, if you're comfortable answering it, fine. Otherwise, those questions could also be directed to the DNR or one of their staff. Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman, in this note that DNR shared with us about the FTE, they specifically said these 136 full-time FTEs, none of them work full-time for the trust. So they added up, as you suggested, to 136. So I can't even tell you how many real people work for the trust or their job roles or descriptions of what they do. I mean, the school children want this to be run better, more efficiently, because we get to put more money in the account. It's pretty simple math. But when you can't get the basic information going forward, it's a struggle.
Representative Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kelleher, you know, my son's in public school. I support public schools. But the jurisdiction of this committee is the environment and environmental finances. And I'm trying to find an answer here in terms of the finances related to the Department of Natural Resources related to your bill, or Mr. Representative O'Driscoll's bill. So that's what I'm trying to cost out here. If we have employees of the DNR that are cost coding time, as we've asked them to do when they're working on something, we should be able, and maybe the next testifier can tell us that, we should be able to see how much individuals are working. Some may work a half an hour one day if they're called here to testify on something, maybe. Others may work a long period of time. So I think I think we have to be real careful about broad statements about how many people are working on what. And I'd like to see the actual numbers of cost codes on this, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen. And I think the facts will show how many people and how many hours they work. I think the question is not only do we know the accurate number, but is it constitutionally okay for all the work that's going on and being cost coded to these lands appropriate and constitutional for what's going on? That's some of the question. We clearly currently have statute that I would say is inconsistent with the Constitution, and that's been the dilemma that the DNR is against. Any additional comments by the testifiers before we bring the commissioner down? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to that question, that has been another question that we, now I for 5 years, have been asking over and over and over again, trying to get a clear answer. And none of us want to misrepresent the truth, but the truth is that we get different answers every time we ask. Now, there is a 2010, there's a 2010 certification report, and since you are the Environment Committee, I'm sure you've already gotten it. And there talks about the number of employees in the DNR and how much and the amount of land that the DNR manages. And then it takes and it prorates the number of the land that we own in relationship to the total land mass, which is about 47%. And so what they do is they prorate their expenses for how much land we own of that total to the total number of employees to what they charge the school trust lands. Now, if I am wrong in that interpretation, so be it. But these are the types of documents we get when we ask, and sometimes it is very difficult to decipher. And there are other examples where, for example, when I asked about the mineral management account, I've asked, you know, I explained that many different times the way I've read the statute, the way I interpret it, you know, how that money flows from the land to the account. And every time I said it, they said, no, that's wrong. It's really this way. And so I said, finally, okay, can you get me a flow chart of how the money flows from the land to the account? And I got one 6 months later, but actually the DNR has actually even said on tape in our advisory committee they didn't really even know how it flowed. So we appreciate your trying to clarify. I think some of this clarification, though, should have come before a bill.
Thank you. Commissioner, do you want to come down next? Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record. My name is Tom Landrum. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Also, for the record, I have a 14-year-old and 11-year-old who are in middle school, and my wife is a school teacher, so I am surely as invested in this as as Ms. Kelleher is, and I believe that I have a pretty good understanding of what's happening in schools because my wife relays to me virtually every night about what's happening in schools. She's in special education, where a huge amount of the growth in education funding or expenditure has happened. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think appreciate the opportunity to be here today. This is a very complex issue, and you are hearing a lot of sound bites and snippets that I would offer don't give you a whole picture of what's happening here. There is a long history to school trust funds in Minnesota. Virtually all of the authorities that I have are offered by you, provided by you, and or the Constitution to do the things we do. And I want to address some of the issues that people are pointing out, because there's an assertion here that there's something dramatically wrong, and yet when you look at the information, I think you'll find that there is not anything wrong. There's a lot going on that's right. First off, I want to point out the assertion that there is a conflict. There's a basic conflict in the DNR's mission and our management of school trust lands. Well, the management of school trust lands are guided by two principles. One is the constitutional principle that we are the trustee. We collectively, because the legislature has a role in that as well, we are the trustee of the school trust lands and the school trust fund. Of course, the school trust fund is administered by the State Board of Investment. We can talk about that later. School trust lands are vested in me as the trustee for those lands. But you know that the Constitution says we shall manage these funds, these lands, for long-term revenue generation, and statute says consistent with sound natural resource practices. So if there is a conflict, as is stated, that we have a conservation mission, it is not because we have a mission that is conservation-oriented. It's because we have a charge by you that we shall manage these lands with conservation in mind. So we do that, and we are, of course, in the economic development business. As you know, especially in northern Minnesota, primary economic drivers in northern Minnesota are the three T's: timber, tourism, taconite. Department of Natural Resources has a role in all of those, and we believe we do a very good job of promoting economic development. There's a question about some of the returns. If there's anything that I've seen that's happened in some of these discussions about what the department is doing wrong, it's with respect to what's happening with forestry lands. We generate $10 of revenue, gross revenue from timber products. We return $1 to the trust. People say that is way too low, that in fact we should be generating, that our expenses are way too high. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would assert that the only way to tell if that is too high is to fundamentally look at how business does the same types of activities. And if you look in Minnesota, there's really one business out there, one private business that responds to stakeholders and the Board of Trustees that does similar types of activities, and that entity is Potlatch. Potlatch, as many of you may know, is a real estate investment trust. They own about 250,000 acres of land in Minnesota. They are, as a real estate investment trust, they're managing their lands for long-term and short-term return, and doing that by both selling land and selling timber. Potlatch's returns over the last few years, and you can easily find this on the website, they have had a growth rate in net income over the last 5 years minus 21%. It's reflective, I would assert, of the timber industry in a down economy, not because they are grossly mismanaging their lands. They have a return on assets of 5%. They have a percent of net income of revenue of about 8%, 8 to 10%. That net income on revenue is the exact same number as what the Department of Natural Resources is returning on those trust land forest acres. So the assertion that the expenses are too high for forest management needs to be benchmarked against something. This is something that all businesses do, and when you benchmark it against a for-profit, presumably well-run company that operates in a similar environment as we do in Minnesota, we have a return that is virtually identical to what Potlatch has. One of the things that needs to be remembered is that the corpus of this fund, all of the revenue that we generate goes into the corpus. The corpus is managed by the State Board of Investment. Corpus has in excess of $700 million in it right now. That's all of the proceeds from the sale of 5 million acres of trust land over time, as well as the revenue that's been generated primarily from minerals management, minerals exploration, and that is managed by the State Board of Investment. The State Board of Investment manages for long-term returns, and they have a portfolio of stocks and bonds that helps generate the interest and dividends that is then returned to the schools. That varies dramatically from year to year, but it's been about $25 to $30 million over the last few years. Up until 1998, the State Board of Investment was heavily invested in bonds. Bonds, as you all know, don't appreciate in value, but spit off annual returns. And they were invested primarily because they wanted that annual return. That is what's provided to the schools. The reason I mention that is if you want a bigger corpus, there are two ways of doing it. You can generate more from the land, or you can invest in more risky stocks. And in 1998, that's what the State Board of Investment did. They started investing in stocks, and so they realized a greater rate of appreciation. But we all know what happened in 2008. The Sanders Bourse 500 reduced itself by 37%, was reduced by 37%. And so if you invest in stocks, which are riskier, you may end up having a smaller corpus. And, in fact, the corpus today is more a function of investment than it is of distributions. The corpus in the state of Utah, which is at about $1.3 billion, 25% of that value of that corpus is a result of investment strategy. So they have invested in more risky assets, and therefore they have a higher corpus. One of the issues that's presented is a reduction in inadequate transparency and accountability. I will concur with that. I have had 1 year on the job to try and improve that. I would assert that the past administrations have not placed enough emphasis on transparency and accountability. We're paying the price for that, and we are working on improving the transparency and accountability. One of the ways that we are doing that is by working with the school, the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee is an entity that you, again, you all created. Historically, has not met very often. We have been meeting monthly with the School Fund Advisory Committee. The School Fund Advisory Committee has some charges that I believe are very similar to what's proposed in the bill, and could in fact be the powers of the Advisory Committee could be increased to provide more of those things. One of those charges of the committee is to provide to you an annual report on January 15th with suggestions on how to improve the management of school trust lands. You have not yet seen that report. I don't believe that report is in the making. It is not a shortcoming of the Department of Natural Resources that you aren't getting the transparency and accountability you want. That is a function of the advisory committee, and it is chaired by the legislature. So some of this transparency and accountability needs to be recognized as not a function of the department's inability to do things. We are working on an operational order. I'm ready to sign that. You have that in your hands today, I believe, that operational order. Is a long time coming. I will agree that, again, this is something that should have been a long time ago, done a long time ago. It gives internal guidance to the department about how we should manage those lands, how we deal with the conflicts, those two conflicts between the constitutional requirement and the statutory requirement. And I believe does 90% of what the legislature has requested that we do in terms of providing additional accountability and transparency to the beneficiaries of the trust, the school children. One of the elements of that is a director. Now, you've just heard about what a bad idea a director in DNR is, and I scratch my head at that because this bill creates a director. It puts a director in a different place without connection to the Department of Natural Resources. I believe that a director is absolutely what we need within the Department of Natural Resources, where we can work among the two different bureaus, the two different divisions, forestry and minerals, that manage these trust lands and provide the revenue to the trust. So I think when you look at that that operational order, that should have been done a long time ago. It's taken a year to get it done. It's ready to be put in place, and it I think provides the direction the department needs to do the things that I've heard that people want done. If we don't hire, and if you pass this, if the legislature passes this bill and the governor signs this bill, you will have a new trust administrator. Now, I can guarantee you that you're not going to pay for that trust administrator out of general funds. My belief is that you're going to pay for that trust administrator out of trust fund revenues. That's what Utah does. In addition, Utah has 70 permanent staff that provide the administration of that those trust lands. One of those is a forester. Two of those work on grasslands. And all of the rest of them are brokers, marketers, lawyers, and contractors who do the management of those lands. That's great. If you give me 70 positions to broker, contract, lawyer, and market these lands, I will give you a greater return as well. We need, we have 2.5 million acres of trust lands. We have, as Ms. Kelleher stated, approximately 130 positions charged with managing those lands. Timber and minerals are not labor unintensive. They are extraordinarily labor intensive. We have 2.5 million acres. We have 136 FTEs dedicated to that. If you do the math, that means we have one person for 20,000 acres. One person for 20,000 acres. That is, I would offer that as an extraordinarily efficient management system, not an inefficient management system. And if you create a new bureaucracy to do more with these lands, you are still going to need those 136 people managing those lands. So the notion that somehow this new administration is going to reduce the number of people managing those lands, I think is grossly mistaken. And in fact, it will increase the size of government. It will create a new department, and I believe it will ultimately return less to the trust. The notion of expenses has been raised on a number of occasions, and that somehow I have a credit card to tap the fund. You should know that the two principal areas that we have that we charge to are the minerals management account and the forestry suspense account. The minerals management account is a pot of money that is there for managing minerals, obviously. You all appropriate that to us. You all have the oversight of that fund. That is not a credit card. You have to appropriate that to me before I can spend it. The forestry suspense account, from which we draw our forest management activities, all of those expenses are certified. They're certified by management budget to be legitimate, viable, relevant expenses. These are not frivolous expenses. We are not putting employees onto these revenues that are not related to those work. They're extremely closely watched by you and by management budget, and I would assert, therefore, are not only transparent but accountable to the people who really can get into detail on this. So I think in many respects what we've got here is a look at the trust land management that is not very deep, that is feeding itself based on what I would call headlines that don't look at the reality behind those headlines, and that is not truly going to generate revenue for the trust. There are some things that the legislature could do that I would assert are sort of thumbtacks on the road for us right now. One is that fire suppression. The trust, of course, is 2.5 million acres out of about 22 million acres of forest land in the state of Minnesota. The department, as you know, provides fire suppression capabilities to the whole state. When we fight fires, we don't charge counties. Counties have a lot of tax forfeit land that they manage. We don't charge the federal government. We don't charge other state lands. But the trust pays for fire suppression activities. Last year, the trust paid $1.6 million for fire suppression expenses. That is a legislative requirement. That's not a department requirement. If you want to put $1.6 million immediately back into the corpus of the trust, you can change that so that we don't have to charge back to the trust for those fire suppression activities. The legislature needs to approve all lakeshore sales. If you want us to turn around and sell a lot more lakeshore, remove the requirement for legislative approval. We can surely do that. If you want us to charge for access, which has been proposed, if you want the hunters and anglers and bird watchers of this state to pay for accessing these lands, you need to give us the authority. They do that in Utah, state of Utah. The Game and Fish Department pays $600,000 to the school trust for the access of hunters and anglers. We don't have that authority. If you want to do that, you can provide us that authority. And finally, if you want us to do more active development, which is what they're doing in Utah, most of Utah's revenues, of course, are coming from oil and gas. We don't have oil and gas. We have low-grade ores, and we have low-value timberlands. You can provide us staff and authority for active development. The state of Utah actively does residential development. They did a joint venture with a development company several years ago on 2,500 acres. They are in the process of buying out that partner right now because that partner is going bankrupt because, of course, the residential market has fallen to the floor. But we can do that if you give us the authority and the funding to do that. So finally, I think one of the things we need to look at is the challenge of the detail here. When you start thinking about pulling 2.5 million acres out of a portfolio of 5.5 million acres, and you start looking at the notion of having adjacent lands that are either in an ore pit or in a forest, and somehow we're going to have one agency overseeing the leasing and the mining in one part of a pit and another agency overseeing the leasing and the mining in another part of the pit, or you have adjacent forests and somehow on one side of this line that is not well defined yet, we're going to have a trust administrator out there managing a forest and a DNR manager out there managing a forest. When you start thinking about those details, it becomes really quite challenging to think of how there might be any efficiencies in there whatsoever. I've rarely seen one entity split into two and an efficiency gain, and I just struggle to figure out how people think that's going to happen. It will provide additional bureaucracy and expense. You can't create a new entity, and this, make no mistake, this is a new entity. They will have this administrator would have sole authority over 2.5 million acres. The legislation provides for an administrator, but I can't see right out of the chute how you're not going to get by without a clerical, a contract administrator, and somebody who can work on policy. This will become, there is no cap on the number of positions this bill can provide. You might get to that 70 positions, just like Utah did, in a very short amount of time. In Utah, they have a $10 million annual operating budget for those 70 positions. They have an $8 million capital budget for that administration. So they have $18 million of additional cost. Again, they have one forester. Put that on top of our current expenses and then look at what type of return we might get out of that. I believe there's much reduced efficiencies. There will be trucks driving by each other. The legislation does suggest that the department can be the contract provider of these services. A lot of the services that we provide to the trust right now are not reimbursed by the trust. I would assert that my being here today is an example of that. The trust is not paying for my being here today. If an administrator for a trust is here in my stead doing this, you will be paying for that. So there are reduced efficiencies. There are more costs that are going to be captured by virtue of the trust administrator infrastructure as it's proposed. I have yet to see where these additional revenues are going to come from. We can't put more mining companies out there. The mining companies are operating near capacity. If we open more lands for mining, it's not going to provide any additional revenues. We can't manage for considerably more forest revenues. We are in the process of doing some things that I think will add limited revenues, but these are low-grade timberlands. We have, of that 2.5 million acres, you need to understand that 1 million acres is peat bog. Some of that peat bog is protected by virtue of legislative action. The SNA program in the Red Lake Peatlands was created as part of the 1991 Wetland Conservation Act. You all have, again, by legislation, reduced the amount of acres we can manage. But of the remaining 1.5 million acres, 500,000 acres is considered poor commercial forest land. 1 million acres is considered medium to high quality forest land. So we truly are managing 1 million acres, and we can continue to manage that to try to maximize revenue out of that, and we will. Finally, I would offer that I think the proposal is constitutionally challenging. The new administrator would report to LCC, not unlike the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council or the LCCMR, which is a legislative body, not an executive body. The separation of powers in the Constitution sets up a system where the legislature appropriates and authorizes, the executive branch executes. This changes that structure, and I think you'll find that ultimately that won't be constitutionally viable. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would stand before you today to assert that the proposal that you see is a fix looking for a problem. It will increase the expenses to the trust without significantly increasing revenues, as best as I can tell. As the trustee for the trust lands, I'm constitutionally obligated to oppose any action that I think will reduce net revenues to the trust. In my mind, that is the case here, and for that reason, I'm before you today opposing this bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner, background, How long has the DNR assumed these duties over the school trust lands?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the trust came to the state over four transactions by Congress. The initial trust was a school trust lands, 2.9 million acres at the time of statehood, so 1858. For approximately the first 60 years, the trust lands were managed by a separate lands department. In about 1930, those responsibilities were conveyed to the then Department of Conservation.
Representative Quong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Commissioner. Last year, you talked about transparency. Last year, when the budget was being presented, I noticed there wasn't anything in there showing me where the funds for the trust, school trust, were in that budget. At that time, I was told, well, we'll have to get that information back to you. I'm not sure. I don't believe I've seen, that clarification. But, that habit of not having this important thing visible when you're presenting the budget, lends credence to the fact that we need to, look at this. And then looking at Operational Order 121 in Item 4 underneath Policy, conduct an inventory of all school trust land and minerals and do a highest and best use analysis. I'm surprised that in the many, many decades that wouldn't have been a common practice, and to me it just shows that this is a good plan, but these are things that if you're taking your and I mean the department, I know you were here just a year ago, but if you're taking your fiduciary responsibilities for managing this land appropriately for the school trust lands, the department would not have to instigate such a broad and expansive policy implementation. Also, last year there was testimony about the income and the from school trust lands, timberlands. And I remember looking at that chart, noticing as the income went up from the land, the dollars going into the trust fund stayed flat, which brought questions. So are you agreeing that maybe in the past the DNR has been less than optimal in its trust duties for these lands and the students?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can't explain the reasons why the past administration did not respond as quickly in terms of creating accountability and transparency as I see as important. I think it's hopefully it's obvious that in the year that I've been here, this has been a priority, because I do believe it is an obligation for me as a trustee to address these issues. I don't think that necessarily says that the department has been negligent in its trust responsibilities. I think the department has not been as accountable or as transparent as would be desirable. But that's different than saying that they have been negligent in their trust responsibilities. I don't know why the previous governor didn't put a higher priority on this issue, but I can guarantee you the current governor places a high priority on it, and therefore I place a high priority. With respect to the budget number, there are several numbers related to budgets here, and so I'm not sure which ones you might have been looking for in the last budget bill, but the expenses, of course, show up in the department's budget as expenses, so that would have been there. What may not show up is the revenue, which is ultimately provided to the trust, because that's not money that the department spends.
Representative Quong.
One last a question. You on several occasions this morning stated that the DNR needs us to give them the authority to do this, and You know, I'm reluctant in giving the blanket authority, but why hasn't the DNR come to the legislature and this committee and others with proposals of, you know, land transactions or other activity to, bring in better income for the school trust fund? Because I do know that you repeatedly come with, proposals for land. I mean, that's not uncommon. So the lack of school trust land proposals, to me, sort of, lights up that maybe the attention isn't there. And I'm reluctant, and I think with the history of the stewardship, reluctant to give blanket carte blanche. And I think the practice of, hey, we've got these really good proposals that are good for the people, the state, and the trust fund, we'd like permission. I mean, can you comment on that general
for the aspect? Comment, Commissioner?
Just a little bit. The statutes require that before we sell any riparian land, we get approval of the legislature to do that. And we do, as part of our lands bill, bring proposals to you. For instance, last year there was a proposal that was approved by the legislature to sell land on St. Mary's Lake near Eveleth. We went through an auction process, a bid process, to sell that property, which is by the airport near Eveleth, and it actually has pretty fair development potential. So that was one that you actually did have come to the legislature last year. Unfortunately, this is not a very good time to be selling land for development. We got no takers at the required minimum bid level. So we do bring things forward as they are as they become obvious.
Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. and thank you, Commissioner Landwehr, this morning. A couple of questions. Kind of taking the 30,000-foot level here and just wondering about the DNR's charge or maybe requirement by the Constitution. The figure used was, like, I think 47% of the lands you administer are school trust lands. Do you have different policies, philosophies for managing those lands as compared to the rest of the holdings that the DNR administers?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would suggest that it's fair to say that in the past the department has looked at these not different types of land. I think we've managed the forests comparably, the mining lands comparably. I think it's always been the intention of the department that, from the standpoint of minerals management, that the statutes direct us to be proactive in both exploration and exploitation of minerals. So I believe that we've got the statutory directive on lands not in the trust to do proactive minerals management. I think that from the standpoint of forest management, the forests have been looked at pretty comparably in terms of how they should be managed. And I think that the commissioner's order that we're preparing acknowledges that they ought not be managed similarly, that they ought to be managed separately. It does bring some challenges to the table from the standpoint of revenue generation, because we are what's called dual certified in Minnesota. We have certification, third-party certification for forest management, two different third-party certifiers for all of the state forests. And that, while it may not provide a premium price, it opens additional markets, so it makes it easier to sell the timber. And the guidelines around the forest certification process require sustainable management, and so that also directs the types of activities we might do on trust lands. We could consider dropping the certification from trust land or on trust lands, but I think there are several practical ramifications. That one is that the state can't just manage part of its timber as certified and part of it is not certified. The certification companies require that it's all or none. So if we drop certification on our trust lands, we will, even if it were administered by a different entity within the state, still considered state asset, we would lose certification on the other part of the state asset. So we lose access to markets by dropping that certification. And so there are some things that we do under forest certification that might that some might view as being inconsistent with the constitutional requirement, but by virtue of getting that certification, having those markets to sell timber, we are in fact managing for maximum long-term revenue.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. And just one last question, and I realize dealing with commodities is an unsure thing, but with the changes you envision in how you administer these lands, could you give us at least an assurance that revenues would increase with the things you're trying to implement?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the big driver in revenues in recent years has been iron ore, taconite revenues. And last year we put $23 million into the corpus. The majority of that, if I'm not mistaken, was $21 million, came from iron ore royalties. And right now, really the revenue to the fund is iron ore and force. There's no non-ferrous, there's no copper-nickel revenue generation yet, although that is seen in the future if it comes to fruition to be the real big contributor in the long term. The revenue is a product of how active companies are mining, and the activity around mining is related to what the steel demand is. So it tanked a couple of years ago, and it came roaring back. It's a cyclical, it's a fluctuating amount. I can't guarantee that there will be more revenue, but what I do believe is true is we will squeeze a higher margin out of the revenue by virtue of what we're doing in the commissioner's order.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome to committee. Commissioner, glad you're here today. Early in your remarks, you mentioned the difference between the constitutional direction for the school trust lands and legislative direction for the school trust lands. Mm-hmm. If the statute that directs you to manage these lands for ecological benefit were not in place, how would the management of these lands change?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, fundamentally, I don't think they would change a lot. Because one of the lessons we have learned in timber management is that you can't ignore ecological principles when you manage timber. We did that back in the late 1800s. We slicked off everything. We had massive fires, as you recall. That was essentially the impetus for creating the Division of Forestry, the DNR, was to deal with all the fires that we had as a result of the poor management we had done on timber before, which arguably was maximum short-term revenue. If we look at maximum long-term revenue, we have to take care of these lands. They have limited productivity. These are not forests in Washington State. Washington State, they get $6,000 an acre off of timber management. We get $400 an acre. We have, aspen, low value timber. We have jack pine. We have black spruce. We have trees that are not fundamentally worth a lot, but they are on very, very sensitive lands. Everybody knows when you're up in northeast Minnesota, you've got about 6 inches of topsoil on top of bedrock. So we have to manage these lands according to ecological principles. What we can do, and this is what we are doing, is we are going to change some of the configurations of certain management techniques. And I will use an example here. When we look at forests, we have some forests that we identify as being mature, over mature, beyond economic rotation, and they provide certain values to certain species. Think of it as old growth, but it's not going to be quite that designation. When we have old growth or old forests on trust lands, the commissioner's order sets up a process so that we move that designation off of trust lands and bring more productive forests under the trust umbrella. So we're going to deal with those issues where we have restrictions on harvesting by swapping the lands out and putting the more productive lands in there. So that is one of those areas where we may be able to use the portfolio as a whole, the other 3 million acres of state land, to manage for old forest, not on trust lands, but on other state lands. I'd make the observation that if those 2.5 million acres are separated, you have removed that ability of the new trust administrator to do that. They won't be able to manage for old forest on the trust lands pursuant to their constitutional obligation.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. Are there school trust lands within the BWCA?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, absolutely there are. There's 86,000 acres of school trust lands in the BWCA. Of course, the BWCA was created some 40 years ago, so they have been in there for a long time. Shortly after the federal designation, there was a legislative designation that declared that wilderness area, so those lands are off limits, by virtue of statute as well as federal designation or revenue generation. We are actively pursuing an exchange and sale with the federal government to take those acres out of state ownership, put them into federal ownership, and in return get some federal acres back and some cash back. The process that's in place right now, it's been underway for almost 2 years now, has identified 41,000 acres of federal lands outside the boundary waters, this is Superior National Forest lands, that could be swapped for some portion of those 86,000 acres of state lands inside the boundary waters. That is a very lengthy process. The Lake County just completed an exchange with the Forest Service for some 2,800 acres that has been in place for 10 years. It's a long process. There's a big public involvement process involved in there. We just sent a letter to the congressional delegation asking for their assistance in making this happen. What the current likely scenario is that for those 96,000 acres, the state would get in the neighborhood of 35,000 to 38,000 acres of federal land outside the boundary waters. We could manage as timberland. And an additional payment from the federal government somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million that would then go into the corpus of the trust. So it's a way to get revenue, immediate revenue by virtue of the cash into the trust, as well as long-term revenue from the timber management out of these 35 to 38,000 acres.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said the BWCA was established 40 years ago, and you sent the letter to the legislature this year?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is an effort that has been tried in the past. In fact, I believe it was tried in 1996, and so it is an ongoing effort. There are any number of reasons why it fails. There are some people that believe that we cannot sell land to the federal government, that it has to go on public auction. So we have run into some legislative obstacles in the past, and there's just huge hurdles in dealing with the federal bureaucracy. But since I have been here, we have been working on this very diligently.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't believe we're here to cast blame on you personally, Commissioner. This is a long-term issue that's been going on for a long time. And just one other remark, we are not Utah, we are not Washington, we're Minnesota. We want to look at the assets and potential we have here in Minnesota. We don't really need to spend a lot of time comparing our state to other states because we are Minnesota. Mr. Commissioner, is there a clear delineation of which lands are school trust lands and which lands are not?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is on maps, but on the ground there is none. There are 2.5 million acres of trust lands, 3 million acres of other state lands, many times closely interspersed. It would be a huge effort to survey and mark the boundaries of these lands, so there is no current clear delineation of these lands on the ground.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a follow-up to that, is there then a clear delineation of on these within contracts, whether they be mining contracts or forestry contracts, as to how much land of within those contracts is school trust land?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, we can do this on maps and air photos. So when we set up sales, whether it be timber contracts or mining contracts, we can delineate on the photo where the boundaries are, and then we can actually go in and do a site-specific survey to identify the boundary line. But we have not gone out and identified all these lands in advance of the need for having an identification of a clear boundary.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But within the contract itself, is there a clear number as to what percentage of that contract is school trust and what percentage is other public land?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and in particular that is true with mining, because in mining you have to know exactly where that line is, because that's where the that's where the dollars come from. So on specific contracts we identify the line between either the school trust land and other state lands, or between school trust land and private lands. And you'll see that when a mining operator, for instance, is working, they will work in different parts of a pit. Some of those parts of that pit may be school trust and some may not be, and they take advantage of the market to identify where to mine that particular day.
Representative Torkelson.
Just one more question. I'd have others, but we have a limited amount of time. One of the questions in my mind is the interaction between other agency activities and school trust activities. And we've talked earlier today about trying to identify the number of FTEs that are involved with taking care of the school trust land. Do you feel that the agency is keeping these things reasonably separate, or could keep them reasonably separate in the future, or are we so deeply intertwined that it's impossible to sort this out?
Commissioner Lambert.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are some inherent challenges when there are multiple administrative units for land that require that we sometimes go to rule of thumbs for management. For instance, when you talk about ascribing costs for fire suppression, it's a fire, of course, doesn't respect boundaries. It'll burn across county land, state trust land, state non-trust land. And when we do a delineation to the school trust, we typically use a gross ratio. So in a particular section where a fire occurs, if 30% of that land is trust land, we will use that ratio to ascribe cost to the trust. So there are some inefficiencies by virtue of having some of those interactions. But I think that generally the guidance we've got by statute, by policy, is such that we are being consistent with the charge of the trust.
Thank you. Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Lander, thank you for being here. Appreciate your time and willingness to help share some of your expertise on this. I think a lot of the questions we're seeing now deal with the forestry aspects. I think most people feel somewhat comfortable with how the minerals aspects are being dealt with. My question is, when we talk about timber sales, what's the market like right now? What are we seeing as far as the appetite? I'm a farmer by trade. I can tell you what a bushel of corn goes for, but I can't tell you exactly the unit price of, say, a cord of wood at the moment. So just kind of want to understand what the market is for timber at the moment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, very good question. And the short answer is the market is improving. Some of the nuances of that is that it's actually been fairly good for the state. And the reason it is when you think of the basket of timber that's out there for a company to draw from, it includes private land, it includes federal land, it includes county land. And when the market for timber tanked in 2008, the state still sold our 800,000 cords a year. And the reason that we did is because now we were the lowest price provider. We price our wood according to auction. So it reflects the appetite of the industry to buy wood. Private landowners who had seen aspen climbing up to $60 or $80 a cord, now it's $20 a cord. Private landowners said, we're not going to sell. They just sat on their timber. We went to auction. We sold our timber for $20 a cord. So we became the provider of choice for the industry. So our sales stayed strong, even though the revenue declined dramatically. We sold the same volume of wood, but we sold it at a reduced price. The price for timber is climbing now. I believe aspen is up around $35 a cord right now. So there's some indication that there's some turnaround in the market. We will continue to sell our 800,000 cords, and by virtue of higher prices, presumably the federal government, the counties, and the private owners will now enter the market as well.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that, Commissioner Landwehr. I guess the part of the question I have, too, is when we're trying to basically enhance the returns going to the school trust fund or the corpus, and you only have some limited mechanisms to actually put dollars into that, and it seems to me that you have a directive to sell 800,000 cords of wood per year, and when the market was low, if we were forced to sell that, we're flooding the market with supply, pushing demand, or when the demand's low, pushing the prices even lower. So I just want to know if there's some diligence done on behalf of the management to figure out, well, we could sell 800,000 cords a year at $25, or we could sell 600,000 cords a year and get $35 for it. And so how do we know that we're matching basically the demand that the market's providing with the supply so that we are getting a good return? I guess when I'm farming and I bring my crop in the fall, I may not automatically bring it to market. I may actually put it in bins and store it for some duration of time because I don't want to take advantage of the price when the market is flooded and you get very suppressed prices. Right. And so I just want to understand how the DNR looks at that interaction.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the important consideration for that is that timber does not necessarily appreciate in value by sitting in the tree, sitting on the ground, if you will. You know, there's a a couple of principles in effect here. One is that we get the maximum amount of productivity in the earlier stages of growth. So Aspen, for instance, the first 40 years of growth is when you get most of your productivity. As it gets older, you get less growth, and you start getting rot and other defects in the timber that actually makes it less valuable. So if you hold it for a longer period of time, you may actually be hurting yourself rather than harvesting it regularly, even if you're getting a reduced dollar value in any particular year. I don't believe with our 800,000 acres, we provide about a quarter of all the timber for the state. With our 800,000 cores, I don't believe we could affect the price by withholding or adding to the market based on 800,000 acres, because it is a quarter of the supply, and the other sources I mentioned provide the remainder.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification. I mean, that's good to know that the DNR has an idea of where the optimal places to log are and where the correct amount of growth has occurred. So, I mean, that's useful. I think that's also important. I mean, I know that former Commissioner Holston or Merriam are not here to ask them how they manage things, but it seems to me that the DNR has a good handle on how to appropriately manage the resource, and so I think, to Representative Klom's point, we really can't look at maybe the leadership of the last decade, because they're not here to ask questions about how they wanted to effectively utilize the resource and what their choices were made. If they were here, we could ask some of those questions, but I do think Commissioner Landwehr is very diligent, and he's made this priority, so we have to make sure we give him some time and some resources to see what the results are.
Thank you. Next, I have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking, if we still had trust lands in the South, we could make Representative Drazkowski happy with selling the walnut that was on them.
Representative Hansen.
Representative O'Driscoll, the commissioner talked in his final point about constitutionality. And earlier he had mentioned about having the director within the executive branch. But this bill, the bill in front of us, has the director, has this occurring in the legislative branch. How is it your bill constitutional?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the position will actually be under the purview of the Department of Administration, so it does have executive oversight as well.
Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think so. Looking at the bill, it talks about this commission being in the legislative branch, and it appears it has the authority to hire the executive director, and it has a number of conflict of interest things and governance. So would the is the authority within the commission?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. What will happen is the commission itself will be set up just to give people a background of how the commission is to be structured. It's to try to depoliticize the commission to start out with, to have 12 legislative members on there. Six will come from the House, six will come from the Senate. Of those six from the House and the Senate, they will be evenly divided between the two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. And what will happen is that will act as the advisory, or you should say the commission that oversees this, and the director will be housed in the Department of Administration.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think we have an advisory committee now, but I'm reading about the director. The commission shall select, on page 10, Mr. Chair, the commission shall select a director on the basis of outstanding. The director serves in the unclassified service at the pleasure of the commission. The commission shall establish the compensation of the director and report the director's compensation to the legislature. Folks, we haven't had a very good track record in the last few months about legislative commissions and employment. I wouldn't want to put the authority for millions of dollars and someone who could be fired and then unfired a few weeks later and then be put into limbo. That's the precedent with a legislative commission. I'm fine with a legislative commission providing advice and recommendations, but not authority. And I don't think the bill is constitutional because it is providing authority to a legislative commission to do executive branch responsibility. How is it not?
Representative Hansen, I would direct people to page 8, lines 822 to lines 824. The purpose of this section is to establish a director to oversee, manage, and administer Minnesota's school trust lands in accordance with the provisions of the Minnesota Constitution, Article 11, Section 8. Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair, we also have Article 3 of the Constitution that provides the powers of the government are divided between three branches, and one persons in one branch can't exercise the powers belonging to another branch. We have Article 4, Section 5, that provides that no senator or representative may hold another office. Article 4 also provides for the method of passage of laws. And Article 5, Section 3, vests certain appointment powers to the governor. So we have multiple constitutional issues here, I believe, with this bill, as you're providing the appointment or the appointment of a commissioner.
A point well made, Representative Hansen, and we do need to follow the Constitution. I think that's absolutely our number one thing, and unfortunately, the legislature has been derelict in doing that. Commissioner Landwehr, you brought out a number of points. You talked about legislation that says we can't sell riparian land. A policy that tells the DNR to sell land, to sell timber when the price is down. Absolutely against the Constitution. We dump wood on the market when the price is down so the kids get screwed. Sorry if you're offended by that, but that's the fact. When Papa was $100 a cord, we didn't sell the land that the kids had. We held it till it was 26 bucks, and the members of this committee, including myself, supported that to keep the mills running. I'm not sure that's constitutional. And Commissioner, you identified all the things. It's not the DNR that's done this. It's the legislature. I don't even know. So we've said you got to have old growth forests on school trust land. We can't log it because we want to be sustainable. Why don't we move that to SNAs and at least follow the Constitution? Representative Hansen brings up a number of concerns. Commissioner Landwehr, you brought them up. We need to address those and work together. But members, we have to follow the Constitution, and we're not doing it. We got statutes through the books all over that are telling us to manage this land for the environment and not for the kids. We can't break federal. We can't break state law. We need to follow that. But the idea that we're supposed to manage this land differently than the private forest is wrong in regards to forestry. So, Representative Hansen, you bring up a great point. We have to follow the Constitution, and doggone it, we haven't been doing it, so let's figure it out. Next, Representative Wagenius, was it to this point? Yep. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on the constitutional separation of powers, I would agree with Representative Hansen on this, that you have a legislative group appointing a director, and I don't see how that squares with Article 3 of the Constitution. And I think it's that is a fundamental part of this legislation. And I think, Representative Driscoll, I'd like to hear why you're doing something that you began by saying, this we're doing this on behalf of the Constitution and doing it in an unconstitutional name. We're doing this on behalf of the Constitution and doing it in an unconstitutional manner. I don't get it. Help us out.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, thank you for that question. I think you helped me to make the point that we're here and why this bill is before the legislature this session. And that is very simply that this has been 150 years of patch quilt work to try to figure out how to manage and how to work with this. And because of some of the things that we have put in place, we do have potential for some constitutional conflicts. This is heading to government operations afterwards, where I hope to be able to take the information I've learned from the Education Finance Committee, the information from here, and continue to work on this bill. The question becomes, from my perspective, do we believe that the current processes are the right processes and that we're getting the maximum return? As trustees, everyone who holds an election certificate in the state of Minnesota has a fiduciary obligation under this portion of the Constitution that's addressed in this particular piece of legislation to make sure that we're advocating for the school kids. And so if we want to try to undo 150 years of work that we've done to try to be able to do that, this is the method or the vehicle in which to try to do that this session. My question is, if we don't do something this session, are we back here again next session or the session after with more additional policies and rules and regulations that continue to further bury us in our constitutional obligations?
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Before I go back to you, Representative Wagenius, I want to lay out the roadmap here. I've got Representative Fabian after you, Representative Wagenius, and then I have three testifiers, Mr. Pagel, Mr. Brandt, and Mr. Haugie. I intend to spend about 5 minutes with each of the three of you, and that'll give us 5 minutes to vote on it at the end. Is there anyone else in the audience that would now want to raise their hand so I know if you want to speak for or against the bill, because this bill is going to get voted on by 10 o'clock. Okay, Mr. Arnosky will be added, and he'll have 2 minutes like we normally to give members from the public to testify, and we have time for that. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? All right, thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to vote on this today, and we have to spend a lot more time understanding the Constitution, because we all, every one of us, stood up and swore to uphold the Constitution. And I can't vote for a bill that is on its face unconstitutional. I don't think any one of us can. I think we have to fix it before it goes on. This is not government ops responsibility. It is our responsibility because we have swore to uphold the Constitution. We've got to learn the language ourselves. I was just reading the Permanent School Trust Fund source investment, Section 8, that we're all referring to. It never uses the word trust. I can't find it. Now, I think it's a good policy for us to have a trust attitude over these lands. But that word is not in the Constitution. There's no word in the Constitution that says we should maximize for the kids. Here's the line. It says, all funds arising from the sale or other disposition of the lands or income accruing in any way before the sale or disposition thereof shall be credited to the Permanent School Trust Fund. It doesn't say maximize. It says what you have, you put in. Now, we've set up rules in statute, and this is all predicated on by law. We've set up rules under this. I do not hear of anything that we have done in statute thus far that is unconstitutional when I read this language in Section 8. But I do, when I read the bill, see that on its face, this bill is unconstitutional on two counts, on Article 3. And what was the other article you cited? Because you were, we haven't even discussed this Article 4, that this particular proposal is unconstitutional. Cannot leave this committee until we fix it.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll and Dietrich and Commissioner for being here today. I have a question. You know, a lot of the things that we do around here are based on projections. Can you give me a sense, the three of you, of how you think, how can you project an increase in income by what percentage to the school trust by changing the management practices that are currently in place?
Who is the question?
All three of them. I'd like to
Any testifiers, very short. Representative Dietrich.
I'll take that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I have done a lot of analysis on what I think what our missing opportunities and what we have done in the past that has lost revenue for the school trust fund, and actually so has Representative Downey. And in one analysis, and of course this is us just digging into the information, and I forget how the commissioner characterized our thought process as a shallow or something, because we can't get the information. Our trustee doesn't provide the information. So, but what we have found is that in a very rough number, about two, the trust is missing. If we would have taken the opportunities that we are either legally or constitutionally or through the Enabling Act required to act on these lands, that there would be about $250 million more in that trust fund. And that is from not following statutes of land trades, land sales, the Boundary Waters Canoe area, the expenses exceeding the revenues in the forestry area. So that is just one estimation. And when I do, when I have done my analysis of yearly expenses, I think that easily we should be able to get, a savings of, just based on what we already do per behaviors, that there should be able to be a savings of $5 to $10 million a year. And that then provides to the school children of this state in interest and revenue about $300,000 a year, and that doubles every year. So by the fifth year, you've got about 10% increase in revenue going to the schools.
Representative Fabian.
May I just say one thing, Mr. Chair?
The
other thing that when we talk about constitutionally unconstitutional, that's a much bigger discussion than what is just being characterized here. As you all know, the reason that this is partially coming to light is because all of a sudden some of us in the legislature realized that the money that was given to the school children was then subtracted from the general fund. And that has been a practice that has gone on for, I think, since the 50s. And I just did my analysis of that. If you take that for the past 20 years, about $400 million would have gone to our kids, right to the schools. But we don't have a trustee standing up every single day saying, legislature, you're doing this wrong. You're in breach of trust.
Any additional comments, Representative Fabian?
Just one. Commissioner Landwehr, hypothetically, there's two pieces of property side by side. One is trust land property, the other is state forest or whatever, and there's going to be some sort of income generated from that. Is there a conflict of interest in assuming that we can philosophically or hypothetically say that these properties are identical and they're going to be logged or mined, but we can't do both of them? Which piece of property gets chosen?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a very hypothetical question. I'm not going to take the Supreme Court's out here, but I would say if there's trust land next to non-trust land, it would be our obligation to generate revenue off the trust land first. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, to your earlier question, I've seen some of these projections about lost revenue. This is what Representative Downey presented. These take some huge leaps of faith. The Boundary Waters Canoe Area trade is included as one of the lost revenues. You know, the department has tried exchanging these lands in the past and not had success, in part because of legislative action, in part because of congressional action. There's a presumption that there's an excess of expenditures in forestry built into this. Again, forestry costs are certified by the management and budget. The whole list of presumptions of additional savings here generally is beyond the purview of the Department of Natural Resources to change those. So this presumption that somehow just changing the administrator is going to change those statutory and legislative requirements is just flat out wrong.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Pagel, you have 2 minutes. Next, I've got Mr. Brandt. You'll have 2 minutes. I'll cut you off at 2 minutes, and the legislative assistant will hold up 30 seconds left. Mr. Pagel. Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. To be brief, we're opposed to this bill for a couple of reasons. Biggest one is it is an expansion of government, in our view. Questions that I cannot get answered in reading the bill, if you create a new commission, how is the work going to be done on the ground? That's not being identified. And if I can get very quickly, in a mine pit, you're going to have many sections of land that will be mining that'll have some school trust land in it as well. Right now, the DNR requires, and it's part of the work that we do, it's all done with the GPS. So if we take a 40-acre plot, they know where that, either the overburden's going, low-grade mineral, or the mineral that we'll be actually using is going. Low-grade minerals get stockpiled somewhere else because as it's occurred, scrap mining is able to mine that lower grade. So you're getting a double return just on that piece of property, which would include trust lands as well. My question would be is, how is this commission going to track that if it's not the DNR tracking it? It actually puts the entities of mining in a position that we're dealing with one more agency, and I see nowhere in this bill how that's going to be handled, and that's a concern for me. Do we want the return for the school trust lands for the students? You bet we do. Last year, payable this year, $36.7 million will be going to the trust fund corpus. Next year, that'll probably go up because we're mining more lands. If you take in the $17 million that's paid in production tax, that comes up to $54 million just this year that's going towards education. We just don't support it with money. One of my general managers is actually on a school board, has been for 15 years. Education is very important to us as we're looking towards a workforce. However, I don't think this bill looks far enough as to how is it going to actually affect those people that are doing the work. You did a great job with House File 1 last year. I don't see how this continues to help us move forward with less regulatory burdens.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Pagel?
Thank you.
Mr. Brandt, if you could identify who you are with, that would be great.
Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Forest Industries, Minnesota Timber Producers Association. In the interest of time, I'll dispense with the disclaimer or the commercial about who they are to, I think you all know, for the forest products industry. To Representative Torkelson's question on the contracts, timber sale contracts say right on them whether or not it's school trust fund lands or some other category. So that's identified right on the contracts that we have. To the discussion on why do you sell timber when the prices are down, quite frankly, when we had the high prices of a few years ago, 04 through 06, we had the highest wood costs anywhere in the world, and we lost 30% of the industry. 30% of the wood consumption in this state went away. 30% of the jobs went away. So if you're going to have a long-term responsibility to the trust, you got to have a long-term market. And if you're going to play, if the trust were to play, I would argue that it can't, but if it were to play a market manipulation game to try and drive prices up, you're not going to have a long-term market. It's as simple as that. Companies can move and be mobile. To some of the other points, we think that establishing a trust fund, call it what you want, advocate, advisor, oversight position makes sense. We think it makes sense to have it somewhere other than the DNR. Understand those arguments. Think MMB is fine. Administration, you know, wherever that does make some sense. We think the underlying statutes need some work in this area. Representative Draskowski took a run at that last year on the perceived conflict between long-term economics and environmental stewardship. There may be a way to fix that in the statute. Certainly the department takes a run at that with the op order, and there's some language in there that I think you could look at for that. You know, if it looks like a duck, if it sounds like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. This is a new agency. The bill is rife with that. I'm not saying that you know, anything outrageous there. It is clearly a new entity of government. If you look at the bill...
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Next we'll hear from Mr. Hauge from AFSCME. Thank you, Mr. Brandt.
I would just say that... Could I say one last
thing?
Go
ahead.
This bill does not transfer the PILT responsibilities. I think the PILT responsibilities with the transfer of this land to the new commission go away. And that's a $2 million hole to the local units. So it seems to me you're going to want to fix that at some point.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Mr. Hauge, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, members. Eric Hauge from AFSCME Council 5. In total, we represent roughly 43,000 employees throughout the state, including seasonal employees who work in a variety of divisions in the Department of Natural Resources, from state parks, fisheries, hatcheries, wildlife management. The issue of school trust lands is not something that AFSCME has been too engaged with in the past, but as I looked over this legislation, I'm hoping that, that can change. This bill could have a drastic impact, positively or negatively, on the work that DNR employees do in Minnesota. We really have one main concern, and that is that this bill allows the new commission to contract out various duties to a private entity for a variety of functions, including the management of the land. We have experienced staff at the agency able and willing to do this work. For the record, we oppose the privatization of the work of our members. It is our hope that as this bill goes forward, we can work with the author and the departments to address how this work gets done and by whom. Should the bill become law, we can play a role in ensuring the land is managed as best as it can be by state employees to ensure the best return on investment for our children and now and in the future. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hauge. I want to say I appreciate your willingness to work on this, and the commissioner has said that, and a number of the testifiers have said their willingness to work on this issue and recognize it's important. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Hauge? Thank you. Mr. Anasti.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Arnosti. I represent the Audubon Society and Audubon members who live in each and every one of your districts. I feel compelled to testify today. I wasn't intending to, but listening to this testimony has really bothered me. I'm a parent of three children who've gone through the public schools here, and I think many of us, most of us, probably are in the same situation. The children, I think it's very inappropriate to say that what DNR is doing is any more negatively affecting the children than decisions that you folks make every day and that I make myself every day. I think we recognize that everything we do affects our children. It's inappropriate to put them up as the sole reason why we need to make changes to what's going on here. I think it is appropriate to take the trust management seriously, as has been happening in the last few years, and I think you're doing a good job of raising very appropriate issues. I think it's appropriate to ask for clarity and transparency for decisions. I think the chair was very accurate in mentioning that state statutes are directing the DNR to manage the lands and the resulting revenues in a manner that is contrary to maximizing revenue. Those are state statutes that have been passed by the legislature. I think it's inappropriate to characterize this DNR as robbing our children. They're following the mandates and the decisions that have been made. Everything we do individually, as I mentioned, affects our children, and I suggest that perhaps in the long run, the appropriate thing to do is what my organization, what I recommended back in the 1990s when the legislature had funds in surplus, is that we buy out the trust interest in these lands, that we deposit surplus funds when the state is in surplus into the trust account, give the school trust cash to manage so that we can manage the lands appropriately. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Anasti. Questions for Mr. Anasti? Thank you. Representative Hancock, was it your motion? Yeah. Would you want to renew your motion? Any further comments by either one of the testifiers or the
Mr.
bill?
Mr. Chair, if I might, I'd just like to make a
Representative O'Driscoll.
If I could, I promise I'll keep it very brevity is important to me on this. We've heard a lot of interesting conversation today on a lot of different interesting topics on how it affects the student land trust. And students are at issue here and what's going to be maximizing their benefit. But I ask us to go back to the top of the mountain, which is the fiduciary obligation. The Enabling Act provides us with the opportunity with the we have fiduciary obligations and a trust obligation because of the Enabling Act. What that also does is it says, if unfortunately I'm involved in an auto accident with Representative Dietrich, and I go to Commissioner McNamara, who happens to be an attorney, and I retain his services, he owes me a fiduciary obligation. If at the same time Representative Dietrich goes to to Chair McNamara and she retains him for services, we have a conflict of interest. And that's what I submit to you that we have, is a conflict of interest. When the commissioner was asked today, which piece of property would you sell? He said, I guess we would sell the trust land. I guess we would sell the trust land. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got Representative Torkelson and Representative Purcell. Representative Torkelson. Okay, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, before we vote on this, if indeed we're going to vote on this, I need to say a couple of things because I got my name squarely on the front of this and I'm on there for a reason. That reason is I believe we need to do everything we can for this trust fund for our children, and no matter what everything else that's said, this is about the kids. This is about getting more than $25 a head out there. I have a serious issue in voting for anything that has a constitutional question on it. I've taken a couple oaths in my time. not the least of which was in the military. I took another oath here to uphold the Constitution. If we have a question on constitutional issue, let's get it answered before we vote on it. I can't vote on it, Mr. Chair. We've got, in Section 17, we've got the Attorney General right there. We can ask the question. We can get a legal opinion on it. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Representative Falk and Representative Anderson both, as soon as I mentioned, I think you both. Did you make Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wanted to make the record correct. I believe, Representative Driscoll, you said that Commissioner Landry's comments were if they were to sell trust land or non-trust land. I think he actually said if it were to log or derive revenue. So just in case we want Commissioner Landwehr to come back up and correct the record, but I want to make sure that that record is correct. And if you would be so kind as to correct that, I would appreciate it.
Representative Falk, I heard it the way you heard it. It was a more general. I think it talked about revenue in general. I thought of logging when he asked it. Representative Fabian, how was your question again, just for the record?
Yes, it was related to logging, mining, any income off the...
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Quickly, Mr. Chair, a question to you. The question of PILT was raised. That hasn't been discussed yet. Are we going to address that at some point, or will it be addressed at some point?
Does Commissioner want to say, or Representative Driscoll, do you know the school trust land pay PILT? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The DNR pays about $1.5 million in PILT payments to the local units of government for land that can't be taxed. And so that is actually just one more example of how the counties and cities are getting money to keep school trust land non-productive. And so, once again, it's in my opinion, it's another entity is gaining from school trust land.
Thank you, Representative.
That's not going to the kids. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on this.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, because of the constitutional questions with this bill, I move to lay it on the table.
Representative Hansen's made a motion to lay the bill on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman. Can I renew the motion?
Yeah, you do need to renew your
okay,
motion.
Thank you.
Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to renew my motion to House File 2244 be moved to pass and be referred to government operations.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard?
Aye.
Dill?
Pass.
Draskowski?
Aye.
Fabian?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell?
Pat.
Quam?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Wagenius?
No.
There being 10 ayes, 5 nays, and 2 abstentions, the motion does pass and it's on to GovOps. We're adjourned.